Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It is Monday, March 24th. That means this is our Hoops HD Report Sweet 16 edition. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. We've got David Dorman live from Mexico with us tonight. David Griggs on the other side, Joby Fortson,
Still in the
John
mood.
Tytel, and Matt Sikowski. Full cast here to go over everything that happened in the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament and preview what's coming up this weekend. Before we even pull up the brackets and anything, let's just kind of throw something out here. Joby, let me actually ask you here. We have 16 teams left, seven, a record seven from the SEC, four each from the Big Ten and the Big 12. Little Duke there as the outlier from as the one ACC as
Little
the
Duke.
one as the one I get one non-power conference. I don't know what we want to call it, but wow, four conferences and that's it. And it's the four power conferences, and really it's three conferences plus
Great,
Duke.
yeah.
Before we came on here, Dorman asked me the question. Let me ask you the question. Is this a sign of where things are going with college athletics, or is this a one-off this year?
I don't think it's a one-off completely. I mean, we're going to see teams like Gonzaga, et cetera. This is an unusual year in that. I mean, come on. UConn just came off two straight national titles, so give the Biggies some long-term love with Marquette, well, Matt, Marquette being competitive and Villanova having a title or two. The fact of the matter is, this is money is now flowing first and foremost, starting at the football side, flowing down to basketball, getting coaches. NIL is changing it. But I think we'll always see this is unusual in that the complete lack of non-power five, but the fact that it's trending that way as a percentage. Oh, yeah. Yes. Without a doubt, we're going to see the power teams dominate the Sweet 16 going forward, but it'll be rare when you only see, when you don't see a Gonzaga here or there.
Can I jump in on that, Chad, to just kind of piggyback off that? Under the radar, you and I and David and Stalika and sometimes Araka, we follow that all throughout the year. And coming into the year, I think we had four or five teams that we thought could be top 40, be inside the bubble, and basically play at not a Final Four level, but a top 25 level. And that was McNeese, Grand Canyon, Liberty. Who were the other two? Some of them, High Point was one. Maybe it was just those four. And none of them did. I mean, none of them had disappointing years, but we didn't get that one or two teams that were constantly inside the bubble. But what's odd is that the teams that did sort of get there, Drake and UC San Diego, I don't know if you remember this or not, but back in October, they were so far off our radar, even though it was under the radar, that we couldn't see them with a telescope. They just came out of nowhere. Like they just, UC San Diego walked out of the Pacific Ocean. And is it that, I don't know, it seems like that there are four or five schools, Grand Canyon being one, Liberty being one, McNeese certainly being one, High Point being one, that have made the decision as an institution, not even just an athletic department, but an institution that we are going to spend a lot of money on athletics and a lot of money on basketball, and we're going to get a quality coach and we're going to get high caliber players via the NIL. And outside, but if you're not willing to do that, I think you are just the most you can hope for is like one good year and then you're going to get gutted.
Well, but I guess maybe more back to this tournament, Titel, let me ask you, is the fact that we don't have one of those little, those under the radar schools left here in the Sweet 16, or even a Mountain West school or a Cinderella NC State school like we had last year, that does that detract from this tournament, or do you think it makes the tournament more attractive going forward?
Depends on your viewpoint, Chad. If I assume everybody loves a good Cinderella story, literally. So if that is your cup of tea, then this is not your year because it ain't happening. It's a very chalky bracket. As far as will we have better games when we have the top seeds playing each other in the weeks ahead? I think so. I don't anticipate a bunch of 30-point blowouts, which we have seen in the past in some Cinderella stories. So I like it for the competitive nature.
I know, Matt, you've got a quick take on it, and then we'll move into the bracket here.
Sure. The one, I think two things to look at are first, all these COVID fifth year and sixth year, whatever players, They're gonna most all of them will be out of the pool next year. So we'd see how these teams reload, especially ones that are taking the strategy of we gotta build through transfers and not recruiting. And then with the house settlement, how will the funds be settled in NIL to where some of these big football schools, they may all be paying the football players that leave a couple of scraps for basketball, but we'll see at teams like, yeah, like say Alabama, Texas, whatever, like who want to be known more for football. That how much money are they going to allocate to basketball? And we'll see, maybe that might be a comeback where if you're a basketball only or basketball primary school, then all of a sudden you might actually have as much in NIL for basketball to offer as some of the other big programs right now. So I'm looking for those are the two I think of the next year or two to see whether this year was an aberration or is it going to be more of a trend.
Or do these major schools that put all the money into football also just have so much money that there's more money than anybody else has in basketball also? I think that's the other way to look
It'll
at
be
it.
interesting, although, will the market they're spending? Hey, they got to spend like eight, if say, even if they do it all 20 million or whatever, are they spending 17, 18 million for football just because, hey, they want to win at football that bad?
Right. Let's get to what's going on the court here. And Dorman, let me start with you. I'm going to pull up the bracket here. Kind of have it zoomed in on the South region. I figured we'd start there in the top left corner. And let's kind of go through each of these four teams here in order, Dorman. Auburn, no problem with Alabama State, and got by Creighton as well. And here they are in the Sweet 16, as I think everyone in the world expected.
Yeah, I think they got tested against Creighton. They definitely got pushed at halftime. This was quite a game. It could have went either way. I don't think Pearl minded that. I think he liked to see his team get pushed, and they got through. It wasn't tight going down the stretches in, one possession, two possession, but they were definitely tested. They came up. They looked good. They seem healthy again. I like the way Broome's moving again. This South region is loaded here. Going to be an interesting situation here with Michigan, who gets a very feisty, tough, defensive-minded, gritty beating Texas A&M and Buzz in a tight, tight game that they pulled out in the end. They really destroyed A&M down the stretch. The last 10 minutes, they owned Buzz and A&M and the Aggies, setting up an interesting take here. Another, you'll see this trend throughout the bracket. SEC Big Ten, especially here in the South, Auburn's going to take on Michigan. I think Auburn's still the team to beat in this region. The only one that would surprise me a little would be Ole Miss getting out of here, but this is Auburn's to lose.
Yeah, Griggs, let's just go back real quick. Michigan, they got the battle from UC San Diego at the end there. And I guess we got to give a quick shout out to Alabama State, who, until last night, had the most exciting finish of the season of the tournament in their first four win over
Yeah.
St. Francis.
Yeah, they did. And I actually thought they battled against Auburn a lot more than what I expected. I mean, Auburn did blow it open finally, but for 25 minutes, Alabama State had a moment. UC San Diego, a really good showing. Their offense was decent, but not great. But their defense was outstanding. They had a chance at the end of the game to win it. It was probably one of the more exciting round of 64 games. I would have, again, I'm a fan of Under the Radar. I have a soft spot for it. I thought it was a great story how they transitioned up, got there in their first year. Nothing against Michigan. It would have been exciting for me to see them win that game and see what they could do in the round of 32. But still a really good season for UC San Diego. Creighton and Louisville are really intriguing, fun to watch game to kind of tip off the round of 64 as well.
And to Griggs's point, if UCSD could have hit any shots in the first 12, 13 minutes of the game, they probably would have had Michigan. They got down too much for the comeback. They couldn't hit a shot, and they're a
They
good
couldn't.
shooting team if
Yeah,
they
you
would have
just
started off a little
wondered,
better.
are they shooting at the rim? I mean, they just couldn't hit anything.
I think we've said some fascinating Auburn Michigan game where Auburn could be in trouble if it's close late because Michigan just has this magic in these close games. But Joby, let me ask you about the bottom half of the South region here, which began with San Diego State doing what the Mountain West does, and you love to talk about what the Mountain West does in these tournaments. But then we ended up with Ole Miss and Michigan State, who almost let New Mexico look like for a while there they might be having that game and going to the Sweet
Yeah,
16.
and this will be a theme that we'll talk about later. Yeah, that Mountain West team actually gave him a full run to that.
You're going to have to get some props to two Mountain West teams tonight. I'm sorry, Joe. You're going to have to do it.
But yeah, San Diego State showed they didn't belong in the tournament. Just as the J&G had been the last team in, not North Carolina. North Carolina did their job. But you know what? Give credit to Chris Beard and Ole Miss here. I didn't think Carolina necessarily played poorly in the game. I think that was a case of Ole Miss showing that, hey, you know, we've had some nice wins. We are that middle SEC team that has that spark. We just are playing against Tennessee and Kentucky and all these protected seeds. Ole Miss showing it first against a good game Carolina team. And taking care of business, not really, you know, Ole Miss was constantly up throughout that game. And the same story, for the most part, against Iowa State. And
I probably watched least of that Iowa State Ole Miss game of any game at all, Joby. They dominated Iowa State the whole game.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Iowa State, you know, I don't know, had their full complement, you know, ready to go. And that hurt Iowa State. But that doesn't matter. You still take a good Iowa State team. It's still a very quality squad at that point. And Ole Miss was, in my opinion, the most surprising good in the first two rounds. Like, I didn't realize Ole Miss would perform as well. And like, I kind of knew BYU would do it. I didn't see Ole Miss making this run in the same way. So I give Ole Miss a lot of credit here. Chris Beard knows how to get his team ready for a tournament, period.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think I'm one of the few people in the world that thought Ole Miss would actually be in the Sweet 16 here. Most people did not. Matt, their opponent next is Michigan State, who, and we know your Marquette team was in there in that region, did not do very well either, because it was New Mexico that Michigan State beat to get here.
Yeah, I mean, New Mexico is a pretty close game most of the way. New Mexico pulled away in the end. And then got off to a great start against Michigan State. And as soon as I think I put that game on my main screen, Michigan State was far the better team for about the last 5 minutes of the first half and basically all the second half. And that's where that 10-point lead that New Mexico got to was just about evaporated at halftime. And then it went early in the second half. And they stayed pretty competitive, but like for about 8 to 10 minutes left in the second half on, I thought Michigan State was going to win that game. I did not see New Mexico pulling it out.
Well, Tytel, let me ask you. We've got Auburn, Michigan, Ole Miss, Michigan State. What do you think is going to happen this weekend, and who's going to end up in the Final Four?
Well, luckily, Hoops HD is footing the bill for me to go to Atlanta and check it out in person. I think that Auburn is just too good. I certainly wouldn't count on any of the four because I think that they all have a legit chance. We get the Big Ten and the SEC. Auburn just has the best player of anybody in this region in Jahni Broome. And while I love all four coaches a lot, it's hard to pick against Izzo in March. And so I think it'll be Auburn and Michigan State. And then coin flip. I'll pick Sparty, but a big coin flip because they're both loaded with talent and great coaching. And Auburn should have a bit of a home court advantage, I think, since Georgia is not far from Alabama.
And this is one of the things when you get a chalky bracket is that, I mean, if it holds, that Auburn-Michigan State game is, I mean, you'd think it was an Elite Eight game. That's how good that game's going to be.
Yeah, this is going to, I think, I don't, I agree with you. I was on the Ole Miss bandwagon. I think Michigan State is too much for Ole Miss here. Any further. I agree with that assessment also. Let's go ahead and scroll down a bit here. I'm going to pull the West region up here. And, Tata, let me stick with you here real quick on the top half of the West region here, where Florida and UConn gave us a hell of a second-round game.
They did. Danny Hurley does not mess around in March. They gave it their all, and I thought they were going to get it done because they're UConn, frankly, and had won 13 straight in the tournament. But just a little too much. The Gators are legit. I've seen a lot of people picking them to go all the way. They certainly were awakened by this game because UConn gave them all they could handle. And I still don't know that Todd Golden outcoached Dan Hurley. I won't say that. But their team is loaded, and they had a lot of easy baskets inside, and their guards are great. So The Gators are a good pick to go very deep, I think.
Yeah, and I got to just take a quick moment here because as he was coming off the floor, Danny Hurley made some expletive-filled comments about the officials that got caught by a reporter. And the UConn AD came out and basically told the reporter that he's got to retract the story or he's going to ruin the guy's career. I've got to say that that is absolutely ridiculous. The guy was doing his job. And if he doesn't want his coach, who is his employee, who works for him, to be making expletive-filled comments about officials, you got to sit down with Dan Hurley and talk to him about his conduct off the court. But that reporter was doing his job, and I give him all the props. And if his career is affected by this in any way, and he needs
Career.
legal representation, give me a call. That's all I got to
Okay.
say.
Chad, I do want to say that the reporter did drop the ball a little bit here because he should have asked the question, oh, his career's in jeopardy? What do you think his employer is going to say about the story?
Yeah, he is doing
What?
his job. He was reporting on something that was newsworthy.
Yeah.
I
mean,
His boss! His boss! I'm going to fire him if you don't retract that story. Well, that's your. Like, what the hell are you even talking about?
yeah. But I mean, and it was just a video he recorded of Hurley talking to the Baylor players, telling the Baylor players what he felt about the officials, which were going to be different officials for the Baylor game anyhow, but that didn't matter. But Dorman, let me go back to you, get back to the court. The
Anyway.
other game in the Sweet Six, in the round of 32 here between Maryland and Colorado State, if it until that game, this game happened, the Alabama State game, the first four had been our best game. But how about this game and this finish?
We finally got a buzzer beater, right?
Yep.
Colorado State was in this game and leading most of the way, and they just played awesome. Nico Medvedev had the coach of the Colorado State Rams had a great game plan. He slowed it down to where he didn't want Maryland to start getting off and getting their shots and then getting their looks down low to Queen. But they just hit shot after shot. Colorado State was so prepared and so ready offensively. I just love their execution. And they just hit shots all night, big three after big three. And they rolled to the basket beautifully on some rolls and picks. Nico Medvedev did a great job. I felt bad for the Colorado State fans and team there because they played well enough to win this game. Maryland, so Colorado State hits a three with about 6.5 seconds to go to take the lead by one. Maryland quickly gets it into the front court, so they call a quick timeout. Ball is on the side by the bench. Maryland, according to Coach Kevin Willard, Derek McQueen, his freshman, says, "I need the ball here, Coach." And Willard draws up a play for his stud freshman big man, who was also a teammate of Cooper Flagg last year at Montverde. And he takes a pass, takes a dribble, takes a few steps off the backboard. Beautiful touch, beautiful shot with no time left, banks it in. Maryland wins by one, and Colorado State is just devastated after playing an awesome game and tournament.
And it was great defense. It was
Yeah,
great.
there was nothing wrong.
Colorado State's play, he shifted and forced Queen into a tougher shot than what Queen probably originally envisioned, making Queen's shot even more impressive because he was thinking he was going to get a layup-y sort of thing. That angle he had to hit on the shot because
Impossible.
of the good work on Colorado State. You've got to give Queen credit for being able to adjust on the fly, 2 seconds. And like you said, give the ball to me, coach. There are freshmen in the past that have done that, and like names like Jordan come to mind.
Yeah, and I gotta say, I saw some complaints out there that did he travel, did he not travel?
No, please.
I gotta tell you that that play has not been called a travel in about
All
25 years
tournament.
in college
Yeah.
basketball. And I'm sorry, I'm one for saying we got officiated. I'm one for saying all that. That play, yes, if you go by the letter of the book as basketball was played in 1982, that was a travel,
I
not
don't
today.
think I let me say this, Chad. I thought originally that it may have been. Well, when I
I watched
saw
it
it
10
live,
times. Yeah, I
well,
watched it
yeah,
10
when I
times in
saw
slow
it
motion.
live, I didn't think it was. Then I watched it again and I wasn't sure. This is no, I asked two different Division One referees that I know and I'm friends with. Both of them said absolutely not. It was not a walk, and they went on to explain why. One in great detail explained why, but essentially, like, he gathered the ball before he had set his pivot foot, and he only took two steps. It was not a walk. I
Wasn't.
was for Colorado State. I wanted them to win. I wanted to get out of the bunker. But when not one, but two different officials independently say the same thing and say that it's not a walk, I think they're wrong. He freaking walked.
Okay, Matt, how about the other half of this bracket, which where Texas Tech got by the Drake team that did at least win one game, and of course we had that great Arkansas St. John's game as well.
Well, it's a very, like I said, the Arkansas State Jazz game, very entertaining, very captivating, not really well played per se. Both teams shot it like crap, but it was still a very entertaining spectacle. And yeah, unfortunately, St. John's poor shooting caught up to him at the worst time. And there you go, you're bouncing the second round, unfortunately, for us Big East people. But yeah, that's one where you knew they had a little bit of a ceiling. Like I said, in my bracket, I thought they'd lose to Texas Tech. But yeah, this is. Unfortunately, a sad ending, but a fun story all year. And that, even though I know many UConn fans were still forever like they really riled up St. John's. St. John's really riled them up, and therefore, yeah, they took a little shot for it, and St. John's losing that way. But it was, yeah, big win for Arkansas. And unfortunately, another SEC team there, and then Texas Tech was really impressive in that Drake game, and that you have to execute and have a strong tactician against a system like Ben McCollum's. But yeah, Grant McCaslin in that offensive rank this year scored pretty much at will, and I think they actually have a fairly easy time in the next game against Arkansas.
And it's been a while, Chad, since we've seen two Southwest Conference teams in the Sweet 16
There we go.
against each other.
Three. You have three.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
Against each other? Single
yeah,
game?
not against each other. Not against each
Everybody's a favorite.
Yeah.
Joby, what do you think about what's going to happen in the West region here? We have another Big Ten SEC game in Florida, Maryland, and Texas Tech, Arkansas.
I felt if Texas Tech was healthy, that they are very dangerous, that they were at least two seed level in my personal view. And I know Hoops HD, I think, had them as a two on our assessment, our bracket, I think, as I remember. At least it was really close. And they are healthy, as proven by good at being a very good Drake team, just taking it to Wilmington without much problems. I like Tech beating not only Arkansas, but then coming up and actually taking out Maryland. Yes. Florida, I think, showed some weaknesses against UConn. UConn, this is not the national title, UConn. This is number eight and correctly eight seeded UConn. I think Maryland is extremely underrated. They've been playing great the second half of the year. I think this win might just inspire them to the next step, and they beat Florida, and then they have a come down against Tech, and Texas Tech is my pick for the Final Four.
Wow, I Dorman, did you think Mar do you think Maryland upsets Florida? I mean, it goes against my picks. I have Florida winning it all, but that's a hell of a pick.
I could see it because they are balanced. And like Joby said, they're playing as well as any team in the country the last 2 months. I think Florida got their test. And like so many champions have, they get that push. They get that one test where they're really pushed to the limit. And Connecticut did that to the Gators. And the Gators came up big and they hit some threes. And I like the Gators here. I think Florida emerges from this West bracket. The Florida coach going back to San Francisco, where he was the first time he was the head coach, was at USF, Todd Golden. So he's going back to that area. Kind of a little cool story there. I think the Gators get out of the West region and march on to the Final Four.
We
Yeah,
have
and
one other
I
very big question, Griggs, about these West Region games, though. Are they even going to be able to get in the building? Because the games are being hosted by the Pac-12 conference, which doesn't exist.
It was a bit of an oversight, and there are issues. I don't know, and it's sadly, Chad, as you know, you've been one of the things the committee would call you about. We were recapping their selections. I don't believe there's a contingency plan in place.
I don't know, but I know we will be seeing a Pac-12 logo this weekend on the court. So,
Yeah.
whatever that means.
We're back.
Let's go scroll over. I'll get the Midwest region here on the screen. Hopefully, it's fully on the screen right now. And Matt, let me start off with you here up top there with Houston. Found a way to hold on against Gonzaga. They got the Zags made a very late run to almost get steal this thing from them.
They kept the Zags at hand length for most of the game, but then Gonzaga did not go away, kept creeping back, and he almost pulled it out at the end. And actually, I think, talk about controversial calls, I think that one where Khalif Battle stole it, and that he was intentionally fouled. You probably weren't going to call that situation, but if we're going by the book, he was pulled by the jersey. There wasn't any play on the ball. He was clearly away in that. But for our soccer fans out there, that's a definite yellow card for a cynical foul. So, in that, but it was just called a straight foul. He made the free throws and knocked it to one at that point, and then but Houston hit their free throws and pulled it away at the very end.
Yeah, and Tytel, they're getting Purdue now, a team that a lot of people didn't think would get here, but they got by High Point and they got by McNeese team that had upset Clemson.
Yes, it's always nice to play a 12 and a 13 to get to the Sweet 16, but they did, and they beat them both by double digits, so take nothing away from them. I've been really impressed by Braden Smith. I got to interview his mom, Ginny, a week or two ago, and she was fantastic. And now that I'm reaching out to different Big Ten parents with Michigan and Michigan State heading to Atlanta, I had one of the Michigan dads comment that Braden Smith seems like the kind of guy you pass by in the hall and you don't think he even plays basketball, but then he goes and watch him on the court and he calls him a savant and thinks he can really make it at the next level. So for those who think point guard play is not important in the tournament, I think you're wrong, and I think Braden Smith is Exhibit A.
Does anybody actually think that?
I hope not.
Yeah, because you need to be watching a lot more shows like this if you're that ignorant.
Joby, Kentucky. I think this is one of the most impressive teams I saw in the first two rounds. Yeah, Troy, one thing, but an Illinois team that I thought was red
Illinois,
hot, that
they
just beat a Xavier team that was red hot. Yeah.
I mean they the way they took I did I saw Kentucky winning this game, but I did not see them doing it in the fashion that they did. Kentucky just absolutely took them out. It was like you're looking at a one versus an eight, not a three versus six. Kentucky played like a one in that game. And so we're going to have a lot of fun because, up next is another team that looked very strong and amazing throughout their run. I mean,
Rocked up.
if you look at the teams that have played above expectation, I mentioned Ole Miss. They most certainly fit that bill. There's only that one ACC team left is the other one. I think these two looked the best in the first two rounds. And so I'm looking forward to a great game in what is a regular season rematch between Kentucky and Tennessee.
The
Yeah,
fourth, isn't
yeah,
it?
Dor
Third.
and Lanier were amazing. Ziegler was amazing for Tennessee.
Amazing.
He is, you talk about senior point guard leadership. He might be only 5'9", but boy, he is all that.
Yeah. Now, Kentucky, Tennessee, this will be the third time they played. Kentucky
Yep.
won both the prior meetings. So, by David Griggs' logic, Kentucky's already proven they could beat Tennessee, so the game doesn't even need to be played. But Dorman, by real logic, how about these two semifinals and the whole region here?
Well, by real logic, a lot of times people say it's hard to beat a team third time. No, not it's not really that way. You won the first two because you're usually better, and the third time a lot of time goes the same way because you're a better basketball team. I don't think that's the case here. I actually think it's good mentally for Tennessee because I think they're as just as good or better of a basketball team than Kentucky is. So from the mental standpoint, you kind of like the Tennessee is not getting knocked off by him twice. On the other hand, Kentucky obviously has something that Tennessee that they've been able to keep them at bay. They've shot terrible against Tennessee. One game they jumped out and they were all over them early. I believe that was the game in Knoxville. So Tennessee has got to get off to a good start, and then they just get that defense. And Rick Barnes is man-to-man, stick on you all over defense. So Kentucky can't get these open looks, these open threes, and then they and then everything else starts to open up. Illinois, they put a clinic on against Illinois. Kentucky, everything was working. The threes were wide open. They're rolling to the basket. Those were working. The mid-range jumper. Kentucky has it going, no doubt. But Tennessee has a defense that could clamp down on the Wildcats here. I think they will. I think this is a tremendous third round, third time we'll see this game. I think Tennessee finally gets them, and Tennessee moves on. But this is going to be a great game here, another SEC battle.
Griggs, how about the other half of this here, too? Houston and Purdue, and then who wins the region?
Okay, I just think Houston is a little too much. They haven't been the most impressive team in the tournament. I mean, they blasted SIUE and kind of sweated out Gonzaga. But, like, I think that life-changing defense shuts down Purdue, who, you know, pretty decent run to get here. I know it was a 12 and a 13, but it was two really talented teams that probably should have been seeded better than that, considering – I shouldn't say they should have been seeded better than that. I don't think their seed reflected how good they really were, and certainly not how good their ceiling was. So I'm not going to take anything away from the Boilers. But I kind of agree with you, Chad. Kentucky's already beaten them twice. They shouldn't be rewarded for repeating what they've already done twice, nor punished for losing. I don't even know why you need to play that game. No need to consider it.
Well, who comes out of the region, though? Does Houston come out of the Houston – Kentucky / Tennessee?
I think they do. I have been really critical of Mark Pope ever since he was at BYU for being an excellent scout and coming up with game plans, but not being very good in tournament settings where you don't have time to prepare. Well, they were good. A, they were very good in the rounds of 64 and 32. And B, this is a team that they've prepared for twice and beaten twice. So I had picked Kentucky to not get past the round of 32 in my beat the puppet bracket. But I do think they beat Tennessee a third time.
But Houston goes to the Final Four.
It's going to be a good game.
Jump up here to the East region. Tytel. After Mount St. Mary's began the tournament with a win over American, or I guess the day two of the tournament, Duke, no problem with them, and no problem with Baylor.
Stunning to me, the latter one, because if there's anybody in this whole region who's proven they can coach in March, it's Scott Drew. And he just got wiped with his players, and I think a lot of them were healthy. They're still missing that one guy from earlier in the season, but I think Celestine and Love were back, and it did not matter one bit. Cooper Flagg looks as if his foot is 110%, and my Wildcats are in for tough sledding in Newark.
And how about your Wildcats? They had a hell of a Pac-12 game in the second round against Oregon.
I will defer most of my time to Dorman, but okay. It finished at 12:20 in the morning on the East Coast, so it's still kind of a dream. I really thought they were going to choke it away at the end because they're lobbing it to two guys at the same time who are missing the alley-oop, and then Biddle's hitting threes, and then they're tossing the ball out of bounds, and then Del Orso saves the season with all those free throws at the end, so I couldn't be happier.
Dorman, he tossed it over to you.
I've been Caleb Love's biggest critic. I have been tough on him. I thought the first year and a half, he was all about what can I do? How many shots can I get up? Because I got to get to the pros. I was this McDonald's. I was wanted by Carolina and Duke, and now I'm out here. It was just too much. But Caleb Love was awesome this weekend, and Caleb Love was passing the ball, and Caleb Love's defense was phenomenal. Caleb Love won this game for Arizona by passing the ball, and he hit some huge shots and he hit some threes, but he wasn't forcing the shots and he wasn't taking 10 threes and taking the offense right out of rhythm. And the threes he was hitting was in the offense with the clock winding down. He wasn't taking threes with 25 seconds on the shot clock. I give Caleb Love a ton of credit. because he's really matured and he really understands what Coach Lloyd wanted out of him, and he's playing to that level finally. Arizona, though, I agree with Tytel, is in for a rough, rough game here against Duke. Duke has everything that one team could need, including a huge, huge size down low and underneath and talent. That's where we'll see if Arizona can play with them. But yes, Caleb Love, great job. Should be an interesting game. Last time they played, Sweet 16, Arizona actually got them and moved on. So we'll see.
Joby, I know that, you know, seed-wise, Arkansas is the biggest surprise in the Sweet 16. Me personally, just because they've never had a tournament success at all, BYU in the Sweet 16 just shocked me. I don't know if you agree with me or not, but I think this is the biggest surprise for me in the Sweet 16.
I actually had BYU here.
Okay, so you don't agree with me.
As opposed to Ole Miss, I actually was not surprised by BYU. Part of it is because I didn't trust Wisconsin fully, but BYU's been playing so well. It's like in late January, they just flipped the switch, started going. And the fact of the matter is, you could add them to that list of teams that are looking really good. They won that Wisconsin. Don't let the score fool you. They dominated Wisconsin. That was BYU's game. And I would also like to thank the Cougars for beating VCU in the first round, allowing my Virginia Cavaliers to get their coach in quick fashion before the portal opened.
What did that coach do before he went to VCU? Didn't he beat somebody in the tournament with a big upset one year? I don't.
He has one win. He does have one win tournament. And he was a
little UMBC over Virginia action.
Virginia game next year. If you don't think for every Virginia game next year, we'll mention the UMBC game with Odom and show a picture of him as a ball boy for Virginia when he was like 12 years old, you're crazy. Those will be constant rolling elements. But BYU's looked very good. But BYU, great run. Now we'll see what you can do against one of the SEC elite. Because – man, Alabama, they did enough, but their ceiling is so high. Alabama could be cutting down the nets, for goodness sakes, in San Antonio. They're so good. I think the run ends for BYU. They're not a surprise in the Sweet 16. I will be very surprised at the Elite Eight.
Yeah, Griggs, I love what Alabama looks so good against St. Mary's, even though they kind of played with their food, I think, is the expression against Robert Morris for a little while there. But that St. Mary's team has been playing so good, too, coming into that game.
They really did look good. One of the things about them, both teams rely on the three-point shot pretty heavily, but I just think Alabama has a few more weapons than BYU, and my God, they're on fire. And, you know, we are perhaps three wins away from an Auburn Alabama national championship. But I don't know, is that a bigger game than when they were both number one earlier in the year? There's a national championship game every year. I mean, those are no big deal, but when they were both number one.
Matt, what do you think about these? Oh, go ahead, Joby.
We talk about great point guards. Sears has, you talk Ziegler, you got to talk Sears in the same breath. Wow. If point guards help you win championships, help you win March games in March, Alabama fits the bill because he is a leader.
Matt, what do you think happens with this East region, with these two East regional games, and who gets to the Final Four?
I think Duke cruises fairly easily. Arizona, I think, is actually a nice matchup for Duke, to where I think they're going to struggle to contain Duke and getting to the hoop, and they don't really have a rim protector to block them. So when Duke gets inside, I think they'll finish. And that BYU-Alabama is going to be entertaining. That game might be played in the 90s. And then give you see how they score that Alabama 90 in the first round, BYU 91 in the second round. And that, I think it's going to be a high-tempo, really fun game. Alabama probably got a little too many horses in that. But then I think it'll be the reality check for Alabama. I think Duke right now is a level above everyone else, and that includes the number one overall seed, Auburn.
Really? So you think Duke wins big over Alabama?
I think by double digits in both games.
Wow. That's bold.
That's a good game, though. Wow.
That's it for the regions. I'll kind of scroll out here, but I guess let me quick run through each of you here and any other thoughts you have on what's going to happen this weekend and what we're in store for the rest of the tournament. I know we will be back again next week to preview the final four, but real quick thoughts on what's going to happen here. We'll get to a final thought here in a few minutes. But Tytel, any other thoughts on what's going to be happening this weekend that you didn't get a chance to voice yet?
I'm a little regretful that I'm not going to Newark to see my boys lose to Duke in person, but I will be in Atlanta for the South region, and I think it's going to be three great games with four great coaches. We might have an all-SEC battle. We might have an all-Big Ten battle. So you'll get all sorts of access and coverage. So please stay tuned all weekend long.
Yeah, and Joby, anything else that you see wild happening this weekend?
I think we're going to see chalk in a lot of ways, except for the region that you let me pick. I think we're going to see one versus two in three or four regions. And, yeah, I revealed the one. I think that will not be the case. Well, since the Johnnies are out, it's impossible. But
yeah, that's the only two seed we did lose was where the Johnnies. Dorman, anything else you want to comment on the
Yeah, I'm going to go back to that South region that Tytel's going to be covering for us down there in Atlanta. Michigan State likes to be the bully. And they like to be the tougher team, and they like to be the team that's all over the boards. Well, I got news for you. Ole Miss is not backing down. They've played this rugged, tough SEC conference schedule all year long. Ole Miss is not going to be intimidated by anything Michigan State throws at them. Ole Miss winning this game wouldn't surprise me because they have the toughness and the coach right there with Izzo. I love Izzo. Izzo is great. Coach Beard has been sensational in this tournament the last 5, 6, 7 years. Remember, he brought those Texas Tech teams. He brought one to the Sweet 16. He brought one to the championship game. He knows what he's doing in this tournament. Watch that Ole Miss Michigan State game. That will be phenomenal.
Yeah, and you know, I think I mentioned this last week, that the whole Tom Izzo, you can't vote against him, go against him in March, hasn't really been that way for the last for like what, 6 of the last 7 years or 7 of the last 8 years, something along those lines. Hasn't been I mean, obviously had the Final Four in 2019. After that, we lost the tournament in 2020. First four in 21, round of 32 in 22, Sweet 16 in 23, round of 32. I don't know that I'm picking against it very often, but I'm just saying that. Matt, real quick, anything else?
I think we're going to see one surprise team. I'm not sure who exactly, although I kind of like Joby. I think that might just be Texas Tech. But although I think we're going to see a bunch of two or three one seeds. But yeah, I'm looking for the surprise team. Like I said, I think that Texas Tech call might be really good.
Griggs.
It's just interesting. There's seven of the 16 remaining are from the Sweet 16. This is very similar to a tournament we saw played 2 weeks ago. A lot of these teams are in it. The other thing is that, like, all year long, really all season long, and especially since we started doing the bracket rundown shows, there were six or seven teams that were very, I think we had on the top two lines the whole way through. No one really fell off and no one really moved up, and they're all still alive. You were saying at the beginning, sort of assessing, like, how chalky the tournament's been, and is that good or bad? I don't know. In some ways it's both, but it is going to, I think that this is very, very compelling from here on out because of all those teams.
And the only team that moved up in there was St. John's.
Yeah, they did.
And they're gone.
Yeah.
Real quick, Griggs, a couple of tournaments going on, by the way.
Yeah.
I'll fill the NIT bracket here, by the way. North Texas at Oklahoma State, UAB at UC Irvine, Kent State is going to Loyola Chicago, and Chattanooga is going to Bradley. And we've had a lot of upsets in this tournament, in fact, a lot of road wins.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've enjoyed about this is it looked to me that while they, I think Rocco revealed that they had called 80 teams to try and fill the 32 spots, the 32 teams that were there, while it doesn't, it certainly doesn't have the muscle or the spotlight of the NCAA tournament. These games have been exciting, and some of the crowds have been really good. I've really enjoyed watching it.
Me too.
Yeah.
I do get a little annoyed when they put them on like against like three NCAA tournament games at the same time, but especially when the games have been not on against the NCAA, they're a good little thing to tune into. We got the next 2 nights here. We'll have those four quarterfinals, a little something to watch while you're waiting for the tournament. The crown hasn't even started yet. We can talk about that next week. That's still a week away. Tytel, any insights on the
Yes,
CBI?
what a
Come on.
day.
Illinois State
Oh.
at Carteret Ward, Gulf Coast fleet Cleveland State tomorrow night in the semifinals.
Chad, I've waited 120 years for Army to win a postseason tournament, and it still has not happened.
Oh, no, they fell today by 3 points to Gulf Coast. This is, if you're looking for, if any NIT games are blowouts tomorrow night, watch something else, go to ESPNU.
Or
If you're
don't.
that desperate or don't, that's the CBI. Let's go ahead and pull the screen down here. Run through each of you for any other finals you thought you have on anything basketball related in any way whatsoever. Joby.
Well, 42 years ago, a young Christopher Cross reached number 12 on the charts.
Wow.
CBS, in their great wisdom, said, "We've heard about this Luther Vandross guy, but instead, we're going to let this be our theme song." It lasted
How much
for.
longer is this final thought going to go on?
He wants me to buzz him, I
It
think.
Wow.
and then we got to our shining moment. But if you want to see some great, go to the YouTube machine, Wayback Machine, and you will see it's actually a very cool lineup. It's Jordan, it's Drexler, it's Olajuwon, it's Ewing, it's Sampson. I mean, some of the great names of college basketball. 83, a great year, and of course, topped off with maybe the greatest finish. One of, if not the greatest finish in NCAA tournament history, with Derek Wittenberg passing the ball to Lorenzo Charles and Valvano running around for someone to hug immediately after. Cue
Tytel.
Christopher Cross's music.
Speaking of shining moments, I will do a nice little segue. One of my favorite, as you might imagine, was the 1997 title game when Arizona beat Kentucky 84-79 in overtime, thanks to, in large part, 19 points from one Mike Bibby, who was known as Henry's kid because Henry won three straight titles at UCLA. Bibby then was drafted second overall in 1998 and had a nice long, almost 15-year career in the NBA, and had been gone since then, the past decade, just coaching in high school, mostly in Arizona. And then all of a sudden, we get the news today that he's the new coach at Sacramento State. And I certainly hope it works out. We certainly had some home runs with the Lute Olson coaching tree, most notably Steve Kerr. But we've also had some strikeouts and popouts. So I'm hoping that Bibby can represent the Wildcats well because he gave me my one shining moment back in 1997.
There you go. Dorman.
Tytel, I'll stick with your theme of 1997 Arizona Wildcats with some breaking news talking about the coaching tree. I believe UNLV is set to expected to hire ex-Memphis, ex-Georgia Tech coach Josh Pastner, who was a player, didn't get many minutes on that 97 team, but he was helped on the bench and helped Lute a lot. He is going to be the next head coach of the Running Rebels out of UNLV.
Wow.
Yeah, that just in, I believe.
I think that could be a good fit, actually. I've always been
Interesting.
a Pastner fan, but
I have too. I've
I think he
always
kind of got
liked
it
it.
over his head at Georgia Tech, honestly.
Yeah.
But that just came through. My last point is a couple weeks I said this when Jai Lucas, the assistant coach on Coach John Shire's Duke bench, had to leave. And I'm not knocking him, had to leave at that moment because he was taking over for the Miami Hurricane basketball program. And he had to leave because the program was such disarray and the roster was a total mess. He could not be there for these crucial moments of the portal being open. The portal opened today, correct, Griggs? Okay. The portal opened today. This is every sports fan. The NCAA basketball has every sports fan glued into this tournament for the next 3 weeks. They have every eyeball. They are doing this is their time to shine. This tournament is, they couldn't mess this tournament up if they tried.
Oh,
This
they can.
tournament
Oh,
is
yes, they can.
absolutely awesome. And they decide that the portal should open in the middle of the tournament. I just don't understand what the NCAA is doing, what they are thinking. They got these coaches jumping to a new job the second they walk off the court as a loser to their new job. They got to switch the timing on the portal. It's absolutely awful. Give it to us a week or two after the Final Four. I don't understand. They can still have it open 90 days, how many ever days they want. But this has got to stop. They got to open the portal after the season is over. It's like they're hurting the teams that are actually in the tournament and keep winning. It's the most ridiculous timing the NCAA, and they've done crazy, stupid things. This is right up there with them. This timing is awful. They've got to push this back.
Yeah, and I'll just throw this in here. It's actually, I believe it's a 30-day to get into the portal only window. So it's a very tight window,
okay.
But which is even worse for the kids that are still
right.
playing. On top of that, I'll throw this also. We are about 15 hours into the portal being open. There's already 917 kids in the portal as of this very moment.
Hey, man, about 30 more have gotten in there since I checked it.
Since we started the show, 30 more entered. Matt, you're up.
I was continue on the scene. I'm amazed how some of these teams played when it's basically an open secret that they're
yep.
leaving. And that wasn't just Will Wade at McNeese. I mean, Nico Medved's basically been the Minnesota coach the last week, and that Kevin Willett may just be the Villanova coach now. And then you see these teams are still either advancing or playing really well. But yeah, I will say there's got to be something done too, because it's one, let coach be a coach, and hey, if you got to leave, you got to leave. In that, but man, this it's amazing. Maybe we're post the point where hey, the teams don't care, we'll play hard, but still, it's just a weird specter to see hanging over the tournament to where, like, yeah, your coach might be gone in a day off. Not to mention Sean Miller leaving Xavier again.
and is Chris Mack on his way back to Xavier, too? On top of that, if he's not available, Travis Steele is. Greg's, you're
going to
finish the show off.
How to craft this around what Dorman just said. I for one think that for all sports, the portal should not open until the championship final is over. Not just men's basketball, for all of them. The 30-day window, it is a tight window, but people start making it known that they want to go in. Before the window actually opens. That's why you see just such a deluge the day that it opens, because a lot of these players told their coach or their compliance officer that they were going in, and it's just that they couldn't officially be put in it until today. But I just kind of agree that it does take sort of the spotlight away from the tournament. It is a little bit categorically unfair, but another thing, it's just that it feels like it's hard for anybody outside of the power conferences or outside of the big money programs to develop talent that could eventually play its way up. You got to go into the portal and find it, and you're lucky you have it for 1 year. And it just seems like for the under the radar schools, it's just hard to sustain anything. And how about, I mean, it used to lose, a team used to lose in the tournament and get knocked out, and their season was over, and it was heartbreaking. But now you lose and you get knocked out, and your coach leaves and your whole roster leaves, and you wonder if Colorado State will ever really be back there again. And the shelf life is so short. Remember when Miami was in the Final Four 2 years ago? You didn't, until I just reminded you. You can't really build on your success anymore. It just seems like it's one and done, and it doesn't feed into the next season anymore like it used to.
Yeah. Wow. Couldn't agree with you more. But on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us. We're going to be back again next Monday night to wrap up what happened in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight, preview the Final Four. But on behalf of David Dorman, Matt Zukowski, John Tytel, Joby Fortz, and David Griggs, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again next week.